Chapter 10, Matt. The store closed at 9, and he wasted no time breaking for the door. Three times when he checked the clock, he'd been sure it was broken. But another minute had eventually ticked away. Not for any special reason did the time go so slowly. Not much more than usual. Work always crawled by. He'd parked his motorcycle behind the shop on the hill. It made so much noise, and the owner always gave him a dirty look if he idled it too close to the store. It didn't have an electric starter, or rather, the one it had didn't work, so he had to kick it over, and it didn't have a neutral light, so he had to rock it back and forth a bit to make sure it wasn't in gear, which was hard on the hill, hard to coast it, hard to be sure. Thinking it was in neutral, he straddled the bike, jumped on the kick lever and the bike, still in first gear, rolled forward off the side stand and fell with him. Now there'd be another 3 weeks of gas tank shaped bruise on the inside of his thigh, but that wasn't the worst of it. Starting to pick the bike up again, Matt saw he'd broken the front brake lever, hit the handlebar and sheared it right off. And the back brake wasn't any too good. He closed his eyes and thought about screaming, but it was a quiet night. The houses in this neighborhood filled with quiet people. Nobody liked trouble. Besides, he'd tried that once. Stood in the street and yelled at the bike, called it every name he could think of. Hadn't fixed a thing. He'd turned the bike around, straddled it again, coasted it down the hill, popped the clutch and roll started it. If only he thought of that to begin with. He cruised the Camino at 25, half pulled over to the curb. That way, if he had to stop suddenly, he'd have a fighting chance. Five guys in a low rider Chevy slowed beside him, asked if he needed training wheels. It was a worse day than most, but not in a whole different ballpark. Only thing Matt hated more than going to work was going home and listening to the fighting. He had a tent in the overgrown backyard for when things got really bad. At 19, he knew he needed a place of his own, but it was not that easy. Everybody wanted first and last month's rent. Nobody wanted to pay more than $4.25 an hour for anybody who was anything teen. He pulled into his driveway, cut the engine, put the bike on the center stand. From out there, he could already hear it. But he went inside all the same. Then he saw the letter on the dining room table. He never got mail, and it was from someone he'd never heard of. Ida Greenberg. Weird. A big, thick envelope. Pages and pages mailed to him from Ida Greenberg, whoever she was. Dearest Matt, if you are reading this, I have passed away. I left this letter and some personal things with a note to my son, Richard, asking him to mail it after I'm gone. This morning, I made some phone calls to my insurance company and to my lawyer. I had to make a very big decision, and I made it. I have a $25,000 life insurance policy, and I decided not to leave it to my son. I don't trust that he would use it the right way. I have decided to split it in three ways. $8,333 will go to you. The same amount to Terry, whom I also like very much, and the other third to that nice lady at the cat shelter, because she is selfless and does good work. This leaves $1 for Richard. He will kick and he will be very temperamental. I think you may have to attend the reading of the will, and it may not be pleasant, but I have worked it out carefully with my lawyer. Richard can contest it, and he probably will, but he won't win. We've sealed it all up carefully. You may do what you want with this money, but I'm trusting you use it well. Not selflessly, just well. Definitely spend it on yourself, but don't waste it. If you want to know why I chose you, it's because you always had a smile and you asked how I was feeling, and then you listened to the answer. You never made me feel like I didn't matter or like I wasn't there. Now, the money is not exactly free. I have done you a big favor. Well, the biggest favor it's in my power to do. I know $8,333 doesn't go as far as it used to, but that's all I have. The house is mortgaged up to the hilt, and my Social Security payments expire when I do. Here's what I want you to do. Do a big favor for three people. It doesn't have to be money. Just give them something that is as big to you as $8,333 is to me. And when they try to pay you back, tell them instead to pay it forward. Give your time if you have to, or your compassion. Lots of people have money, but not that. You are a nice boy. Enjoy the money. Best wishes, Ida Greenberg. Just a little over 6 weeks later, he had it in his hand. He'd already put a $50 deposit on the apartment so the guy wouldn't rent it to somebody else. He spent the night there in a sleeping bag. He had a decent bed at his folks' house, but no way to move it yet. It was quiet. When he opened the window, he was right out on the slanting roof, because this apartment used to be an attic once, before somebody divided up the house. And he sat out on the roof in the dark, in the cold, just liking the quiet. He saw trees and nothing else, just the side of a hill covered with trees, and a silver of yellow moon gleaming through, which was more than enough. So he sat there for a while, wondering where people go when they die, and what he could possibly do for somebody else that would mean as much as this $8,333 meant to him. And what to buy with the rest of the money. And whether Miss Greenberg would know. He didn't figure she would. It seemed corny to think she was watching. But he'd never known anyone who died. Never thought much about it before. And he wasn't all that completely positive that she wouldn't know. Unlike the $8,333, it wasn't something he could take to the bank. The next morning, he drove his old piece of junk motorcycle to the Honda dealer in St. Louis Obispo. They said they'd give him $75 in trade. The first thing that caught his eye was a real pretty, brand new $750 with a windshield and all custom age aerodynamic in red and white with a custom paint job. He sat on it. He shouldn't have sat on it. It cost almost $7,000, which was just so close to all he had left after his first and last month's rent and that big security deposit. But man, it was more than pretty. It was like power, but it was too much. They also had a new $350, like his old one, but 7 model years newer and no miles, and a neutral light and electric starter. And then, for $3,500, they also had a $250, also with a nice custom paint job, also brand new, a $350, a $250. The $250 would go fast enough to ride on the highway, just barely. And if he could go faster, maybe that would just get him a ticket, which he could not afford. Insurance ate up too much of his paycheck as it was. Then he sat on the $750 again, feeling that power. Nobody was going to pull up beside him while he was on this bad boy to talk about training wheels. But it was too much. It was most of the old lady's money. That was all she had, that insurance. Like someone cashed in her life, and that's what it all added up to. This was giving him a headache. He rode his old piece of junk to the Taco Bell, had a breakfast burrito, thought some more. Then he went back and bought the $250. And on the way home, stopped at Cuesta College to get a catalog of all their classes, and sat on his brand new little bike in the parking lot and leafed through the catalog. And it was so cool, because there was no possible combination of classes that he could not afford. He stuck it in his backpack, and the motor started up nice and clean when he hit the button. He took Highway 41 just to feel the curves. So there, if she could see, she'd know he made good decisions. And if not, he could see. He would know he didn't waste it, whether or not Mrs. Greenberg ever found out. From the Diary of Trevor, Mary Ann and Arnie have never been very nice to me. Like when I told them I thought Clinton was gonna win the election. Arnie hooted and laughed at me. Bush, he said. George Bush. Bet on it. Mary Ann came to school the next day in a cap that said, Ross for boss. On the front. That's how much you know, she said. Anyway, my mom said to pay them no mind. She told me a story of when she was a kid, and she told her Uncle Bobby, who was this big football fan, that Joe Nathan and the Jets were gonna bet the Colts gonna beat the Colts in the Super Bowl. He laughed at her. Then when the Jets won, he wouldn't talk about it with her. She said, some people just can't handle being wrong. I said, the Jets and the Colts and the Super Bowl? Man, that must have been like a century ago. Both those teams are totally awful now. Thanks, she said. Now I feel real old. When I gotta get up and say my project flopped, Marianne and Arnie are gonna give me the business. I sure hope Clinton wins the election.